We open on a sunny afternoon in the middle of the woods. Like most days, we find four human boys playing pretend and arguing about something bizarre. They are, of course, the Bright Mountain Brothers, the heroes of a story that has not yet begun. Adulthood feels ages away, and only the oldest seems interested in thinking about it at all. Isaac is 14. His hair is pulled back out of his face, and he is using his hands to really emphasize the point he is trying to make. The next oldest is Ezra, but he goes by Z. The 12-year-old seems entirely uninterested in what his brother is talking about. He sits nearby, slowly running his hands through the fallen leaves. Ellis is 10. He stands with his hands on his hips, smiling from ear to ear, while Isaac nervously paces circles all around him. His rebuttals are quick and designed only to get under his big brother's skin, not to further any sort of argument of his own. The youngest of the brothers is Will. He is 6 years old and a good 2 feet shorter than everyone else. His hair is cut extremely short due to a recent accident involving glue. Mud is caked on his face, and filling his hands is his most recent catch. He stands between Isaac and Ellis, looking up at them, patiently waiting for his moment to show them what he has found.
Ellis, I feel like you're just trying to get under my skin at this point. What's wrong with Starfire? It's easy to hear. It sounds cool. It is cool. Boys, what's cooler than a star exploding? Name one thing.
I can name a lot of things that are cooler than a star exploding. For instance, two stars exploding. For another thing, a wizard. For another thing, cinnamon rolls. For another thing, a singing goat.
Guys, what if our code word was Bert?
What is Bert?
Will holds up a small lizard with large, unblinking eyes. This is Bert. Oh, Bert is cool. Let's go with Bert.
Guys, our code word can't be somebody's name.
Yeah, what were you thinking, Will? Bert would never work.
I just like Bert.
He's got a point.
No, he doesn't. He's six. Ezra, could you please just back me up on this?
Well, what about just like, hey, watch out?
Z, that's not a code word.
Then I have no idea what we're doing.
Bert, it is then.
No, guys, this is important. You need to take this. Listen, Mom and Dad aren't always going to be around to protect us. We have to learn how to protect each other. And part of that includes planning for worst case scenarios. That means we need a code word. A code that means I need help. Even though no one, not even Mom and Dad, will know that's what it means. That way, if one of us is in trouble, they can say it, and the other three can come rescue them. With the way Dad is talking, it could happen one day.
What about Cowabunga?
What about it?
In that book, Mom reads us, those turtles that are like us, They say it every time they're about to do something cool, and this seems cool.
See, what do you think?
That works for me.
Ellis?
Works for me.
Okay, then. Cowabunga it is. Isaac takes his hand and puts it outstretched in front of him.
Fine. Z just slowly makes his way over and puts his hand on top of Isaac's.
Will walks underneath and stands up on the tips of his toes and puts his hand on the bottom.
Ellis waits until everybody else has put their hands in, and he puts his on the very top because he doesn't want his hand to be sandwiched between anybody's.
Isaac looks at each of his three younger brothers, and he suddenly becomes even more serious than he normally is. He says, we're always going to be there for each other. Right?
Yeah, of course, man.
Of course.
Yeah. All right, then. Cowabunga.
Cowabunga.
Do you guys want to do a blood pact?
Yeah.
Always. Come on.
Isaac.
Not
you'd be
always.
So good.
You've got it. You've talked about it.
I'm walking away. Our blood would become blood. It would make us clones.
The smell hits you first. It is unmistakable. Then it's the feeling. Your bare feet are sticking to the floor. You're standing in it. You open your eyes, and you are in your family's home. And surrounding you on all sides are the bodies of your entire family. Isaac, Ellis, Will, Mom, Dad. All dead. All lying in an ever-growing pool of red. Suddenly, you hear a snort. You feel breath on the back of your neck. You slowly turn to face the beast, but instead find an ornate standing mirror. You hear a voice.
Us.
You can't quite make it out. You hear it again.
Us.
And then you wake up. Z, it is 13 years later, and you are standing at the iron gate of your new home, The Haven. And before you stands a member of your new family, Clint. This 6'5", 400-pound behemoth of a water genasi looks up at you and says it again. Boss, you okay? It's at this moment you realize it was just another dream. You must have fallen asleep standing up again. You breathe a sigh of relief, thankful that your family is not, in fact, dead. At least, as far as you know. Drew, would you please describe what Z looks like today?
So Z looks like he does most days. Z is wearing kind of a makeshift tank top. And then wears just a simple pair of, like, slacks. He's barefoot, as he usually is. Z is just a very large man, about 6'9", is just built like an absolute unit, sporting a decent bit of hair across his chest and arms. He has about mid-length back hair that's pulled back into like a loose
wait so his
like,
his back hair is long enough.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too.
you said mid-length back hair.
I did say mid-length back hair. But yeah. A hair that reaches to the middle of his back. But he currently has it pulled up into like a messy bun on the back of his head. He's sporting a relatively long beard with patches of red in it. And this man is covered in more scars than anybody his age should be.
Yeah, so again, Clint, this massive water genasi, his skin is like dark, dark blue with like algae like growing on certain places of him because he's just wet like all the time. He looks at you and he like puts a hand on your shoulder, clearly like a little concerned about you.
Boss, it's okay if you want to just take it easy today. Like I can handle the new guy.
Nah, I appreciate that, Clint. But nah, as the so-called leader of this band, I gotta represent at least at first. I trust your ability, but I gotta do at least my part.
Well, your house, your rules. The two of you are standing just in front of the gate of the Haven, where the two of you reside, where the two of you stand as the primary protectors. And you heard from Desmond earlier today. He is a bartender in Lifefall. The two of you have this relationship where if he hears about somebody that could use the Haven, at least for a while, if not permanently, then he will contact you and say like, hey, I'm sending somebody your way. And so you know that somebody's coming, but you don't really know anything about them. You're looking out on this gorgeous forest. It's fall. It's that perfect time where the leaves haven't fallen yet. It's just so beautiful to look at. And as you stand here looking out, why don't you roll me a perception check?
That would be a 13. That's pretty good for me.
On a 13, well, here, let me roll something else here. You see that he gets a little closer than you probably would have liked. And maybe it's the fact that you just woke up. But Clint is actually the one who spots him first. You feel like this nudge on your side. And as Clint just kind of silently points over by a tree, where after Clint points him out, you clearly see this black-robed figure. Their hood completely obscures their face, and they are just staring out, looking in your direction. What do you do?
Ezra simply like lifts his hand and just kind of raises his voice, silence. Hello there. Have you come to seek some sanctuary, my friend?
You see the figure kind of like tucks itself behind the tree for a minute, then kind of thinks better of it and kind of steps out into the open a little bit more. Again, all you see is just this dark hood and darkness underneath. But you hear a voice that says, I suppose that depends. So what if I were?
Well, you would simply be questioned. We only got a couple of questions, and then we would grant you entrance, and we'd find you some place to sleep tonight. And if you decided to stay for longer, then we would make better, more comfortable living arrangements for you until you find some other place or you find the meaning or answers that you are looking for here.
You see the figure is sort of frozen there for a moment and then slowly but surely begins making their way towards you and Clint. Must we do the interview here or could we perhaps go inside somewhere? Perhaps with a roof?
So, I'm not sure exactly at this present moment what affliction you may have, but I hope that you can understand the caution of me trying to protect my people. I don't know you yet, and I simply mean to keep them safe. I assume if you decide to join them at some point, you will also appreciate that same courtesy.
Let's just say I'm quite uncomfortable in the sunlight, but I would love to speak with you face to face.
Well, we can take a step over here to the side, step into the shade, if that would make you more comfortable. The questions aren't long. It doesn't take a whole lot. Part of the whole thing of Haven is built around trust. Just a few simple questions so that I know a little better what I'm dealing with or have to look out for.
Why don't you roll me a persuasion check? And do it with advantage, because really good reasoning there.
Yeah, that was solid.
I rolled really high. Persuasion. There it is. Okay, so minus one. Good. So that's an 18.
Hey, 18. You see this man, he nods. That there is just like this shady, this particularly full tree that provides a lot of shade that you can kind of step under. After you do, you see he very slowly and timidly begins to pull the hood back from his head, and you see a dragonborn. He has light purple scales and bright yellow eyes.
That, coupled with the covering he wears around his neck and his aversion to sunlight, immediately clue you in to what his affliction is. He's a vampire. A new vampire, but a vampire nonetheless. He says, "My name is Jackson Longwind. And as I'm sure you could tell, I have had this affliction for not very long, just a few weeks. It has only really begun to fully take its toll on me in the past couple days. I haven't had the hunger yet, though I expect it is coming soon. And I figured, better safe than sorry."
"Well, I appreciate your honesty, Mr. Longwind. So you haven't hurt anybody since you've had this affliction, or like had any desires outside of what you would have had before to cause harm to anyone?"
"No, not yet. When I was attacked, it was truly terrifying. I barely escaped with my life." And he pulls his cloak down to where you can see the bite marks. It's not just like two little poke holes of like classic vampirism. There is like a chunk of his neck missing. "I have experienced nothing like that. That said, food has lost its taste. Drink turns to ash in my mouth. I can't even fathom doing what I know I must do soon. So that is exactly why I'm here. I was hoping that you and the others here might offer some guidance."
"Well, I'm truly sorry that this has happened to you. Nobody deserves any kind of affliction like any of the ones that the people here suffer. I hope that we will be able to make this transition as smooth as possible for you."
You see, he nods. "So did I pass?"
It's not so much of a test that you could get graded on. It's more just, the more information I have, the more I can get you where you need to go. But yeah, come on. I'll show you around."
Cool. So he follows you back over to the gate. And I just want to ask, like, how do you think this gate works?
So I think what it is it looks kind of just like an enormous wall of just like the thickest thorns that you could possibly imagine. And he simply reaches out his hand and kind of just like pokes himself on the thorns so that his blood like reaches onto the vines and they just kind of pull away, just creating like almost a tunnel through the vines.
As the gate opens up, we get to see the Haven proper. This little community is set up in a circle and is fully walled in by these thorns. Shacks with thatch roofs line the circular wall, leaving the area in the middle open for people to mingle. In addition, there are several picnic-style tables in the center that allow the entire community to eat together for every meal. The space is humble, clearly thrown together by the scraps people of neighboring cities didn't use. But the people here are happy. You see, before Z founded this place, there was no home for vampires, lycanthropes, and the like. Very few people took the time or risk of caring for these afflicted people. So while there may be little to go around here, the gratefulness each and every person holds in their heart cannot be fully expressed. As you bring in yet another person who has asked for your help, what are you feeling in this moment?
I believe Z is feeling pride, as he does most days, of what he's accomplished for all these people. And I imagine that there is a new bit of anxiety, as there is when he introduces anyone new. There's always a hint of worry there, but there's a hopefulness that he always tries to hold on to. Some of these other people have came in pretty sketchy, and now they're just as helpful and integrated into this community as anyone else.
Roll a perception check.
14.
Well, first you hear a giggle, and then you look down and you see that there is a broomstick on the ground in between your legs. And then the broomstick shoots up.
Cat!
And you hear a little girl scream in delight as her footsteps run away.
Oh, punk.
I got you again! You gotta be on your toes, Z.
Yeah. You got me.
With that, we're going to move away from the Haven, away from the simple life, to the city this continent is known for, Lightfall.
Lightfall got its name the day the great wizards in Daru defeated the gods themselves. When Oru, the god of life, died, their 10-mile-tall body fell on a city called Blue Tower, a city known for its incredibly tall and impressively sharp Blue Tower. Predictably, the deity's heart was pierced by the tower, and while the original city was obviously destroyed, Lightfall was built from its ashes. The innate power of Oru's body changed the landscape forever. Animals gained sentience, plant life grew out of control, and the shape of Oru's body became one with the earth. The tower still stands to this day, though its blue has been traded for green. Standing at 5,000 feet tall, it is truly striking against the exposed ribcage of Oru. But this tower is not where we are going today. We glide past it, further up the body, and settle at the neck, where we find Glittering Bone Apartments. At the very top of this tall building, there is an apartment, roughly twice the size of one of the bigger huts in the Haven. But here we can only find evidence of a single person. And that individual is Ellis. Ransom, would you please describe what Ellis looks like today?
Yes, Ellis is a pretty boy. He's tall, broad-shouldered, and strikingly handsome, meaning handsome and also profoundly punchable. He always keeps his hair in a perfect movie star coif, always effortless. Ellis dresses perfectly every day in his dark green robes with white on the sleeves and his gold stitching and inlays. It's very, very stylish. He also wears a necklace of pearls that looks so rad. He is standing, he's looking out the window. He has a drink in one hand, he's got some tea, and he's looking at his right hand, and he's trying to focus on keeping his ring finger still. Very calm face, but he's just looking at it, trying to make it stop shaking.
Without warning, you hear a loud snap as there is a surge of magical energy. Do you have any figurines or anything in the room?
A wine collection.
A wine collection.
That's the Eastern Wall. The Eastern Wall is my wine collection. So
you see across the room from you, there's this pop of magical energy. One of the bottles falls off the side of the wall as it just there's this explosion. Do you do anything as the wine bottle begins to fall?
Can I shield as a reaction on the wine glass?
Yes. Yeah, you totally can.
He just turns around and he just goes, it just bounces on the ground in this little force field and just rolls around and he just goes and picks it up.
I will allow that to be the case, even though that's typically not a spell you could cast on things.
Yeah, that's why I was asking.
So you see the wine is saved and standing, seemingly having caused this ruckus, is your friend of many years, Rhea Beaumont. She is a tiefling. She has light orange skin. She is dressed in these red robes. She has these dark brown horns that go straight up off of her head with a slight twist at the top. You do see Crimply on her shoulder, this pygmy owl. He's about the size of a can of Coke. He is light brown and just massive eyes that are just always wide open. And the moment he sees you, he just is immediately just kind of getting a little antsy, clearly wanting to roughhouse.
Awesome.
She looks out and sees the wine bottle just kind of rolling around in this spherical shield. And she says, "Oops, I apologize. I forgot that was there."
"No worries, my dude. No worries." I walk over and I pick it up and I set it down on the counter and I try to walk with where one shoulder is facing her. So she's just in profile so I can put my right hand in my pocket as I'm going to pick up the wine glass.
Got it. She says, "Are you ready to go?"
"Honestly, are any of us really ready to go? You know, life comes at you fast, and so does death, in a way. At the end of the day, I hope that I'm ready to go at any point. I hope that I'm content enough with my life."
She's just resting her head in her hand, and she just says, "Ellis, we don't have time. You know what I meant. We don't have time for this. Are you ready to go? Is this what, you're wearing?"
He looks down at what he's wearing, and he just goes, "I mean, it's excellent. Should I be wearing something else?"
"This is just kind of what you wear every day. And this is a..."
"Whoa, whoa, whoa.
This is kind of a big deal for
I'll
people.
I'll have you know, though I do have many styles of this outfit, I have it in many different colors. I don't wear the same one every day. I'm not a farmer."
She goes to your closet and she just opens it up and she just is showing you all of your different outfits.
Most of them are green and white. Yeah.
Yeah. And she's just like, You couldn't at least wear red. It's kind of the whole omnibus thing. We wear red. It's the
red just makes me feel puffy. Okay. It makes me look a little puffy and I don't really like that, you know."
"When is it not going to be about you, Ellis?"
"When it's not about me."
She begins to say something and she says, "That's actually a really
it's not a good time for me to have a comeback to that because it kind of is about you today. So we're gonna come back.
He winks at
her. We're gonna come back. No, no. You can't.
I won.
No.
I won that one. I won. Crimply does. Crimply the Destroyer is fully aware that I won that one.
It's just Crimply.
I'm sorry. He earned that title in battle.
He is an owl. He doesn't like to battle.
Typical owls can't kill a hawk, let alone torture a hawk in the way that I saw him do it. He's a destroyer.
He did not do that.
He did.
He did not do that.
Absolutely did that. I saw him do it. He enjoyed it too. He's a real sicko.
Crimply is not... You're a bad influence on him.
He goes, honestly, he's a bad influence on me.
She looks down at Crimply, who just is... He's so well-trained and just loves Rhea so much that he has not left her shoulder and does not unless he's given permission. But you see, he's just like... At this point, his excitement after seeing you has just been like growing this entire time. And he's just like... vibrating, just like so, like just like barely containing himself. And she just kind of sighs and she just says, okay, Crimply, you can have 1 minute. And then he just like dives at you. I need you to make a strength check.
A strength check? I'm not good at that. I'm too pretty for strength.
We're going opposed.
Oh no. Okay. Is it a saving throw or a check?
A strength check. Athletics. He's trying to pin you.
Oh, athletics. Okay. That still is just a 5. Can I roll with advantage because he is the size of a Coke can? And has hollow bones because he's a bird?
The thing is, he is a little magical owl.
Can I just roll that with advantage just this once?
I gave him a -2 because he's been training with you, and so he's stronger,
okay.
Which means he ends up with a 6.
Okay.
And he is able to successfully knock you over.
I think that Ellis just wasn't expecting it. And just kind of like flinched and then kind of like tripped over himself as he like, got
he's
hit.
So small. He just like dives right into your solar plexus and you just like lose all of the air out of your body for a moment.
I fall on the ground and I just like I'm rolling around holding my stomach and I just say, Destroyer. He's a destroyer. This should be brute.
You see Rhea just kind of like eyes just go wide like, oh.
He's battle hardened.
And Crimply is just like rolling all over you. He like kind of flutters up to your neck and just is like rubbing his head into your neck, just loving on you so much. Give me a stealth check with disadvantage.
Ooh, it's not ideal. That was the same number twice. So that's a 6.
6. Okay, now give me a perception check, just flat.
Okay, this is... Yeah, that's more my speed. That's an unnatural 20.
Nice. The whole thing with Crimply knocking you to the ground, your hand came out of your pocket, and you see that she clocked it.
I sit up, and I just kind of try and ignore that she did that. So I go to do my secret handshake with Crimbly, which is just a dab up. But like, you know how like typically like whenever people do like the fist bump and they like go down and then back up and then they do like a knuckle punch. It's that, except it's my fist and his entire body.
Yeah, he's so, just like, doing a flip. And then he just does a flip and like hits your hand with both of his feet.
Yeah, it's freaking tight.
And then he just, like, again, so well-trained, just flies up, lands on Rhea's shoulder. You see Rhea is kind of trying to be cool about it. She was allowing herself to have a little bit of fun of watching Crimbly just destroy you. But now she kind of recomposes herself and says, we really should be going. They're expecting you.
He stands up. Ella stands up and he just goes, yeah. Okay, yeah, sounds good. And then he walks into his closet for a second and comes back out wearing the same robe, like in a moment. It's like a Looney Tunes moment. He just walks in and walks out. and he's wearing what he should be wearing to the omnibus. And then he just kind of gives her this like look a little bit, trying to like gauge whether or not she's going to like bring up the thing about his hand. And then he just says, "It's a big day."
She says, "Ellis, I know you're nervous, but you really shouldn't be. We're sorcerers. This stuff comes natural to us. And you're one of the best I've ever met. Roll an insight check. DC 15.
That's an 18.
She paused right before she said, "You're one of the best." She doesn't think you're one of the best.
Ellis tries to keep it cool, but he, like, his chin naturally rises a little bit, and he breathes in, and he says, "I am the goat."
She rolls her eyes.
"Listen, I know someday you want to be like me. You want to be as good of a sorcerer as I am. And I want you to know that if you chase your dreams and you work
okay.
hard,
all right, all right,
you'll be
done.
Able to
and
maybe meet me."
you feel like your body charge up with static electricity as the two of you are teleported from this area and arrive in the omnibus.
In an instant, we arrive on a small island hundreds of miles away. An island whose security is such that teleportation via escort is the only way in or out. No one lives on the island outside of the omnibus. There aren't even any other buildings. This single, beautiful castle is all that is here. But similar to a certain doctor's time machine, these sorcerers make good use of the space. As the purple teleportation circle powers down around Ellis and Rhea, we get to see the inside of this immensely magical place. You are in a perfectly circular room, and there are probably over 1,000 books lining this one room alone. Where there isn't a bookshelf, beautifully carved wooden tables stick out from the black stone walls, and on them sit various potions and artifacts. The one exit of this room currently leads out into a winding staircase, but Rhea, realizing how late you already are, quickly walks over and waves her hand over a panel just to the left of the doorway. Green runes appear rotating beneath her hand, and suddenly the open doorway is replaced with a closed door. And Ellis, you know it leads directly into the Council of Zindaru's chambers. Rhea turns back to look at you, then looks down at her feet, struggling to find the right words to say. Eventually, she just says, "Have fun in there."
He hears you say that, stands there for a second, and he just goes, and he just kind of lightly punches her on the shoulder, and he goes, "I always do." And then he's going to push open the doors and be like, "I have arrived. Welcome me. It is I, Ellis. Prepare to have your minds absolutely blown." And then he just like walks fully in. And just his arms are outstretched the entire walk down. And there is somehow from somewhere entrance music.
You just hear Crimply go, "Oh." cool. So as you walk in, we're going to actually cut away from there.
We move away from the omnibus and the remote island it rests on and venture back to Lifefall. This time, we rest near the left leg of the once god, where the homes are smaller and the crowd is larger. The crowd seems to have a life of its own, constantly flowing in and off of the streets. But if you were to pay close attention, you would see that there is one place that this crowd never ventures, and that is the front door
of One Blue Tower Museum. The owner and proprietor, Verna Hennessy, was a little girl when Oru fell. And now, almost 80 years later, she is still determined to keep the city she grew up in alive. We see her now, standing amongst the bits and bobs that constitute her exhibits. She is a woman that is clearly at least in her 90s, though no one knows her age for certain. Her skin is dark, and her back is permanently hunched over. That being said, Miss Hennessy is not weak. Her hair, bright white, shoots out from her head in all directions, and she wears a clearly ancient but once bright blue shawl around her shoulders, the yellow logo of the museum embroidered on the corner. Her hands, long and bony, are constantly at work, and currently, they are using a knife to crack open walnuts frighteningly fast. The walnuts are to be served at the door, if any patrons happen to arrive. Standing next to her, cleaning up the mess she is constantly making, is Will. Justice, would you please describe what Will looks like today?
Will is a fairly tall and lean young man. He has like dark black hair kind of pulled back. It's about like shoulder length, and it's just kind of like pulled out of his face. Behind his ears for the function of it. He looks very tired, but not upset. It just seems like bags under his eyes are kind of the usual, his default state. He has light gray eyes and very sharp features. He doesn't look strong, but he looks fast, almost like that of a professional rock climber. At the moment, he's just wearing essentially cargo pants, a leather vest with lots of pockets. Some are open, and he doesn't seem to be aware of that. And they all seem to be very full of various things. And he has a cloak just kind of like loosely wrapped around his like shoulders with the hood down and like tied behind his waist to keep it out of his way as he is just happily moving along with a broom and keeping an eye on her hands with the knives as he is always watching to see if she cuts herself one of these days. She has not yet, but it's always a concern in Will's mind.
Miss Hennessy is in the middle of giving you a grocery list. She's saying, okay, so we need milk and eggs. Oh, we're running low on salt. Get some salt too. Okay. So potatoes, milk, eggs, don't forget eggs, the Shrine of Dabomat, avocados, and parsley. Let's see, did I say milk?
Yes.
And eggs, and potatoes, avocados, potatoes, parsley.
And the Shrine of Dabomat.
She's going to keep going until you interrupt her.
Yeah, to kind of feel like he's being a little bit more polite, he lets her go on for like a few minutes, and then he's like, all right, I think I've got everything. And
I will say, Will, you've never heard of the Shrine of Dabomat before.
Yeah. He goes, what store can I get that shrine from?
The Shrine of Dabomat. Oh, I remember that church. I never really went to the church, but I used to just walk by it every day on my way to school. It was so beautiful with the stained glass and everything. Anyway, milk and eggs, potatoes,
okay,
avocados.
Salt.
Salt.
And the Shrine of Dabomat.
Yes, and the Shrine of Dabomat. So you know that a church like that doesn't exist like in current day Lightfall.
But would I know where it used to be?
No, you need more information.
Okay. So where was that church exactly when you had passed by it on your way to school? I seem to have forgotten where you went to school. And he kind of pulls out a notepad and starts to like prepare to take notes.
She says, oh, I went to school right here. And she just puts a circle on the page.
on the blank page. Okay. Will just looks at it for a second. and then he reaches into his jacket and pulls out a map of the city, of like the current day city. Mm-hmm. And he just puts it on top of the notebook page. And it kind of scribbles real quick.
It lines up.
It lines up.
Yeah.
That is so impressive.
So like when you have the map out, she's like, oh, yeah. So I would walk from here to here. There it is. And she points. And you actually see, no roll necessary. You have this map here. There's an apartment complex. And what are the chances? You're 90% sure that that is the apartment complex that your brother Ellis is currently staying in. But it seems like this apartment complex has been built on top of where that church used to be. You've been working with her long enough and recovering these artifacts long enough that, you know, any church that existed, none of them were rebuilt when Lifefell was brought back up. It seems like someone just built an apartment complex right on top of the remains of this church.
So Will says, so I need to get all the groceries. Should I go get the shrine first and then just swing by and get the groceries on my way back? Or like, should I go now?
She says, oh, do you need a list?
Nah, I have a list. I know what we need.
Okay. You seem to be pretty forgetful sometimes, William.
I'd forget my shoes if I wasn't wearing them.
Can he roll luck to see if he's wearing his shoes? Because I don't trust him on that.
I'm not gonna have you roll luck, but I am going to have you roll a perception check. Having everybody roll these today.
21.
Okay. That is going to give you advantage on this next roll because you hear the door open, but you look over, both of you, well, she doesn't hear it, but you look over and you see a cat. It has a white underbelly with like light brown, like almost like a reddish brown, and a dark brown, like patchy on its back, and it is 90% fluff. And it has these piercing green eyes, and it looks right at you as it just begins to walk its way into the museum. And this isn't just any cat, Will. You immediately recognize this cat. This is Isaac's cat. This is Beetle. Beetle the cat. And you see that Beetle is just kind of wandering in, takes one look at you, takes one look at this plate that is just like on a stand, just in the middle of the room, and immediately jumps at it. Make a dexterity saving throw with advantage because you rolled so good on your perception check.
All right. I did roll better on the second one. 21 again.
All right. So with a 21, you described to me like what happens. You're able to save the plate.
Yeah, I think he, as soon as he walked in and like she walked in and he made eye contact with her, he started to, he like dropped, set down the broom and started to walk towards her. And then as soon as she jumps, he like kind of runs forward and slides on his knees. He kind of slides his arm under, and so she's like laying down his forearm with his like hand like on her like mid chest, and then he's got the plate in his other hand and he's holding it like at his full arm extension above her to make sure that she doesn't jump out of his hand to grab it. And so he's just sitting on his knees holding both, but just like looking at her.
She immediately just begins to purr as if like you guys are just best friends and she didn't do anything wrong. Just like immediately start to cuddle with you. Beetle's always been a big fan.
He sets down the plate back on its stand and then just kind of gently sets her on the ground and fishes through his pockets to see if he has any like food he can give her, any food for just like a cat. And so I'd just like to roll like a luck something to
sure,
just see
sure.
if I
go for it.
If I have it. Yeah, that's a 15.
Yeah, I think you have like some kind of like, you have like granola in your pocket or something.
Yeah, Will pulls out his homemade granola. It's a fun thing to do in his off time, but it is just loose in a pocket. He reaches in and pulls out just a handful of it. He just sets it down in front of her in a little pile and kind of sits cross-legged. Hey, Beetle. I don't know if you eat that, but it's there.
She's already eaten it. And I think as you're just sitting here watching your brother's cat, you realize that Isaac never followed her in. And it seems like Beetle is just here by herself. And it kind of hits you that you've never seen Beetle by herself. You've never actually seen Beetle without Isaac by her side.
Sitting on the ground watching her eat the granola for a minute or two, just kind of like smiling to himself and scratching her ears. And then as that goes into his mind, he just stands up and starts to look around for Isaac and starts to walk towards the front door, and then thinks better of it and walks back and gently picks up Beetle and brings her with him. And he just kind of opens the front door and looks around and is just going to try and see if Isaac's around.
Yeah, make a perception check.
19.
You definitely don't see Isaac anywhere. But with a 19, you do see something else. Will, they're back. It looks like six of them, white-robed individuals that just have these black skulls embroidered on their chests. They have not seen you yet, but they are moving your way. And it looks like they're coming to the museum. What do you do?
Will, he freezes for a second and then unties his cloak so that it goes around his shoulders and puts up the hood and backs right back into the museum holding Beetle and kind of puts her into the cloak, holding her with one hand, and he walks back to Verna. I'm going to go on the grocery run and get the shrine now. Just going to go ahead and get that out of the way. If any patrons come in for the museum, can you just tell them that don't employ anybody named William?
Okay, don't forget potatoes.
Yeah, no, I won't forget any of it. All right, thank you. And he jogs through the museum and kind of just picks up a go bag and puts it over his shoulder. And it pulls like a string, and it seems to be like some sort of pulley system, and launches him into the air. And then he crawls out through a window onto the roof and closes it behind him, and then jumps off and like goes out the other door. And he is heading towards the apartment because Ellis also might be there.
Yeah, and as you're on your way, go ahead and make a stealth check.
Ooh, that's an 18 plus 10 for 28.
Yeah, I think you're invisible.
He's very good at hiding.
I think now would be a good time to tell our listeners that these are level 5 characters.
If you couldn't tell by Ellis's Ellis's thing, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, and we don't have to mention that I'm clocking in at only 27 hit points.
Nobody has to know about that. Cut that out of the podcast. Cut that out.
You begin to make your way towards the apartments and towards your brother with this cat in tow. So we cut back over to Ellis's apartment, where Ellis, you and Rhea are arriving. We see Ellis. Some time has passed since we last saw him, and he is now holding the last of the 5 vestigium that you have been awarded by going to the omnibus and going through these courses. And as you stand here looking at this gem,
you are understanding that you no longer have to go to the Omnibus ever again. In fact, you might never go, whether you want to or not. You would have to be invited by someone. You see Rhea kind of looks back over at you and says, well, I should really be getting back.
Okay. We'll talk soon. Hang soon.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll hang soon.
And then he looks back up at her, and then he just kind of like lifts up his arms a little bit in an awkward way and tries to like go in for a hug. He's not always as nice as he'd like to be, so he just tries to like kind of go in for a hug, you know.
Yeah, you see she seems like a little surprised by the offer, but then obliges. She gives you this hug back, and you both sit there for a minute, just sort of holding each other. You see, you feel Crimbly kind of cuddling up in between you.
Pat, pat.
Pat, pat.
And goes, and he opens the wine that got dropped, and he pours himself a glass and just chugs the entire thing and puts it back down. And then he just like starts walking away, and then it catches his eye again. He looks back at it, and he comes back and he pours himself another glass, and he like raises it to Ray, and he just goes, do you want one?
I got to get back to work.
Sounds good. It was good seeing you. Good hanging out. Let me know next time, you're in town, or, you know, next time you want to apparate in my apartment, by all means.
She chuckles. She says, see you next time.
See you next time. And he just like raises his hand into a salute, and he says, the Destroyer.
You see, Crimply nod solemnly.
And then the two of them teleport away again, leaving you alone in your apartment. You look down at your hands, and you see you are holding two things. In one hand, you hold a red gem, the Vestigium that represents the last spell that will be taught to you by the Omnibus. In your other hand, you hold a glass of wine. As you stare at it, you remember there's a pub within walking distance that does open mic nights.
He sets down the wine glass and takes the bottle and starts drinking from the bottle as he walks downstairs.
Will, I will say that you have arrived in the general area. Where are you?
He has just broken into the wrong apartment and is on like one of the halls, like on the staircase, because he kind of forgot exactly where Ellis was. He's like one right room, one hall too low. So he just has opened a door and looked in. But he's like, I think as Ellis is like passing on the stairs,
he just walks by. He's like going down, and he just goes, hey, Will. And he was walking down the steps.
And Will just goes, oh, sorry. And closes the door, and then walks really quickly over to Ellis and just grabs his shoulder to like stop him from moving. Hey, so he reaches into his cloak and pulls out Beetle.
Beetle. He starts petting Beetle. I forgot that I don't like you. I forgot that you are a fiend in a cat's body. How's it going, Will? What are you up to?
I have Beetle, but I do not have Isaac.
Okay.
He's nowhere. I can't find him. Beetle walked into the museum today without Isaac.
Did he leave you a note?
No. No, I wasn't expecting this, and I do not remember a time that Isaac was not with Beetle.
Right.
So, have you seen him around? Also, can I crash in your apartment for maybe a day or two?
You've asked me a lot of questions in the last 30 seconds. And I'll be honest with you. I started thinking about something else after the first one. Just follow me.
Because I don't want to go out there.
Why? So why don't you want to be?
I just don't want to be outside right now. I don't want to get sunburned.
You don't want to get sunburned? He just like looks at you for a second. He goes, it's going to be like 2 minutes. So like, are you really going to get sunburned in that amount of time?
I just don't want to risk it. I'm just going to stay inside, and I need to know if you've seen Isaac, and if not, can your magic stuff contact him?
Out of game, I have message.
Yeah, message wouldn't work for something like this.
Yeah, because it's only 120 feet. Okay, I'm just going to go. Okay, here's what I'm going to do.
While Ellis is saying this, Beetle jumps out of Will's arms and just begin to like scratch herself on a doorpost, just like all up and down her like neck.
Well, looks to the doorpost. Was he in there, Beetle? Is Isaac in there?
Beetle is just like not paying attention to you, just like scratching something that just really itches. You see that she has like this red collar that you've gotten the vibe that she's never really liked wearing, but she is wearing it, and she's just scratching like all up and down the collar.
Can I do like an arcana or something to see if there's something magical about the collar?
And can I just do a perception to see if there's anything like attached to it?
So let me get this straight. The rogue is going to do the arcana and the sorcerer is going to do the perception. Okay.
It's our personalities, I think, more than our classes.
Yeah, go for it.
Because I think Will's overthinking it and Ellis is underthinking it. And so it's, I think that's why it's working okay. Like that.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
I got a 21.
Oh my gosh, I also got a 21.
What? Yeah. That's like crazy. The fifth 21 tonight. Fourth or fifth. That's awesome.
That's awesome. Just
rename the podcast to 21.
21?
Yeah, so I think I'll do the Arcana first, just because you asked for it. There is nothing magical innately about the collar, so I can go ahead and confirm that. With a 21 perception, though, you see that she is not scratching the collar. You see that there is something tucked underneath the collar. Like, so it's like almost like sewn into the inside of the collar.
Ellis looks over Will's shoulder and he just goes, there's something inside the collar.
Yeah, Will's going to reach forward and grab the note with like one hand and then with the other hand, just start scratching the place where it was. And kind of just to get the edge for Beetle, but then he's going to open it up and kind of lift it up so him and...
Cool. So yeah, so you see, like, you actually have to kind of, like, take the collar off because it's, like, legitimately, like, sewed into it. You see, like, Beetle, as soon as the collar comes off, is just, like, immediately gets the zoomies and just starts running around. Just so happy. You manage to get it easily, just kind of, like, pull the thread away and open up the piece of paper. And what you see just sort of hits you in your stomach. It's Isaac's star map. From the moment that he created this map, from the moment Dad helped him become a druid, this map has never been apart from Isaac ever. And you know, if Isaac doesn't have this map, he is defenseless. And I think we're going to cut away from that moment and go back to the Haven. So, Drew, what does an evening at the Haven look like?
I think at Haven there are always like kids playing games, there's food being served, like, I imagine there's a couple people just like kind of jamming on like banjos and dulcimers and mandolins and stuff, just kind of chilling around a fire, just having a good old time. I think, but mainly it's just, I think the nights at Haven are just really calm. I think because everyone, like once the sun starts going down, everybody's work is done for the day. They just kind of all start winding down and it's just more about just hanging out.
Where is Z in the midst of all this?
I think Z is kind of just walking around, going from circle to circle, just kind of mingling and making sure everyone's okay and that everyone actually ate food and that everything got done that day that needed to get done, trying to make a list in his head of what the next day is going to bring. Just kind of taking his time, just enjoying the moment, and then kind of actively trying to keep an eye out for the new guy.
You see Clint saunters up to you. He's holding a drink in his hand and he hands one off to you. He says, "Seems the new guy is settling in just fine. He's been getting along real well with the Gold Feathers. They have a lot in common. I see you didn't take my advice about taking it easy today. Just let me know when you want to call it quits."
"Yeah, I might take you up on that soon. It's just feeling kind of restless as of late and just sleep just hasn't really been helping. So just, I guess, kind of just pushing that off."
So Clint looks back at you. He just kind of nods.
"I'm sorry to hear that, Z. Sometimes sleep is the only escape you get. And when you can't even get that, it can really do a number on you. Just let me know if there's anything I can do."
"Appreciate that, Clint. I've always counted on you, and you've always been there. Really do appreciate that."
Clint raises his drink up. "To better nights."
"Cheers."
Just then, you hear a scream. You immediately recognize the scream because it's one that you heard earlier today. But instead of delight, it is very clearly in fear. You hear Cat, probably 100 yards away from you. What do you do?
Z turns on a dime and just starts bolting without a thought in his mind directly at the sound.
Clint is in lockstep with you. Your drinks clatter to the ground. And immediately you see what is causing so much fear in Cat. You see Jackson. It seems that the hunger has hit him for the first time. And you've been around that before. Like a vampire in its infancy, when it just hits them, it's like they cannot control it whatsoever. They're like a wild animal that first time. You were hoping you had more time, and it seems like you don't. Kat has her back to the thorns. You can see the thorns beginning to tear up her dress as she can't back up any further as Jackson is beginning to pounce on her. You realize you are not going to be able to reach her in time unless you do something.
Z runs. You see his legs like start to snap and tear as they elongate and pull, and his speed increases, and you watch as his arms, it starts at the hands, but it tears like down to his forearm, and his hands split down in half and then warp and then start to meld together into these two long tentacles on each hand as he just starts running, just screams out with all of his might. It's just, "Hurry!"
As you yell out, you see Jackson in this frenzy state looks back at you, and you can see that even an animal is afraid of the Demogorgon. You jump on him and immediately make an athletics check.
That'd be a 17.
That still beats a 13. You are able to pin him to the ground, which gives everyone else here enough time to also join in. You look around and you see that several other people around here that are also mid-transformation. Like, everyone here is very capable of handling this situation. You just got here first. And you see the vampire family approach, and they just have this bucket of blood that they just dump on both you and Jackson as the blood just covers Jackson's face and he begins to lap it up. And you see and you feel him as you just have your tentacles just wrapped around his body in this hold, that Jackson's breathing begins to slow and he begins to regain composure. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry.
This feeling, this desire, it's not something that you can control. But there's two things that have to happen here. One, you have to make peace with this and make peace with those around you. Now you know what this feels like. As you speak more with this family, you'll be able to see the symptoms coming on a little quicker. Hopefully in time, you'll be ahead of the game. You won't have to worry about it anymore. Two, you have to apologize to Kat. You scared her real bad.
Jackson looks over at Kat and he says, I'm so sorry, little one. I was not myself. And Kat, you know, kind of wipes the tears away from her face. She says, I wasn't scared anyway. And she runs off. Jackson looks back at you, says, thank you.
You're welcome.
Z! Z! Buddy boy! My brother! Z! Z, my brother! It's your brother!
Z does not respond. The doorway tunnel just opens, and Z's just standing on the other side.
Ellis, you and Will see for the first time, I don't think either of you have been to the Haven before, the thorns begin to open up, and you see your brother. I'm imagining still having been transformed, because this happened like pretty quickly. So I think it's been a while since you've seen your brother like this, but you are suddenly faced with him in this monstrous form.
Ooh, okay. Hey, Z. Hey, is this a bad time?
It's about as good as any time, really.
Okay. Good to see you.
Good to see both of you. What are you guys doing here?
Oh, Will.
He stepped back when he saw Z still in that form and was just kind of like staring at him. And he just kind of shakes his head. And he like pulls out of now like a carry-on satchel bag with like a blanket in it. He pulls out a beetle and Isaac is missing. Yeah, I don't know what to do about it, but we've got the cat and we've got his star map and now we're together, so... That's as far as I've come, right? And he looks to Ellis and he's like, I think that this is the end of our plan so far.
Yeah, I haven't thought about anything regarding this plan since then.
Will, we're going to go back to that 21 Arcana check. There was nothing innately magical about her collar, but now you feel like she is like charged up. It's like Beetle is about to cast a spell.
He holds her at arm's length and then turns away from Haven and sets her down on the grass, and then just kind of puts a arm over Alice's chest and just steps back with Alice. And so Beetle might explode.
Beetle just kind of like begins to have this like soft like blue glow to her, and then she's just kind of like looking around confused, and then just starts to run towards Haven.
Whoa.
Alice says, she might be a bomb.
You see that as she goes, she jumps in the air and then suddenly just freezes in the middle of the air, as if like somebody caught her. And you realize in this moment that where she froze, she is exactly 10 feet away from each one of you. And she slowly goes back to the ground and sits. And she's glowing bright blue now as the spell Animal Messenger is taking effect. She opens her mouth and you hear a very familiar voice. Hey boys, it's Isaac. As you know, I am enjoying a beautiful vacation by the Pink Sea, and I can confirm it is just as beautiful as we remembered. I wanted to say how much I miss you guys and how I cannot wait for you to join me here. Before long, all four of us will be jumping into it, saying, "Cowabunga!" It's going to be something to remember. So seriously, do not take your time getting down here. See you soon. Isaac.